This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik. If you're a parent, you're probably exhausted from dealing with yet another case of the sniffles or the cough at home. Clinics have been swamped with cases of childhood respiratory infections like influenza and something called respiratory syncytial virus. But is this increase normal during this period? I'm catching up with Dr. Sanjay Woodhull, consultant pediatrician, to catch us up on, what exactly he is seeing, why cases are spiking among kids, and of course, what parents need to know. Dr. Sanjay, thank you so much. You must be very busy this period. So do describe to us, what kinds of trends are you seeing among common childhood infections right now?
Aishwarya, thank you so much for the invite. I've been meaning to reach out to you guys about this as well. But you're absolutely right. In the last 3 to 4 months, and certainly since April, we've been seeing a huge increase in the number of infections, particularly viral infections in our clinics. And I'm talking about both in the outpatients as well as admissions. And I think no hospital, both in private and public, have any beds. There are such limited supply of beds. And the staff, I must say, has overworked. Both our nurses and doctors have seen so much of infections, and almost primarily it's viral in origin. Okay. What are we seeing in hospitals? Straight off the bat, I think we're seeing a lot of COVID-19, not admissions to hospitals, but outpatient visits. And by and far, the majority of children with COVID-19, we can quite easily manage them in the outpatients. Most of the time, it's just reassurance and typically, within 2 or 3 days, the flus, the coughs, or the vomits or diarrheas will settle. So there's a little bit of difference with the way children, small children, I'm talking about the preschool children, present with COVID-19. Usually, it may not be just cough and flu. It may be vomiting and diarrhea along with fever. And for that reason, we do the test. Most of the time, we tell parents, do the home test kit. And if the child doesn't get better in maybe 48, 72 hours, come in, we do an assessment. And then we may want to do a rapid test here, which can give us the answer within a couple of minutes, and then off they go. The other infections we're seeing a lot of is influenza. So in my practice currently, we're doing the rapid test kit for COVID. If they're negative, then we'll straight away proceed with the influenza test. And that test typically is fairly accurate. And in 70-80% of the time, it can lead to an answer. But I must stress that doing the influenza test is not important if you seriously think that this is influenza and you can consider starting treatment straight away. So those are two common bugs we're seeing. And that's really in the outpatients. In the inpatients, we're seeing a whole gamut of infections. We're seeing a lot of RSV. We're seeing a lot of respiratory syncytial virus, metapneumovirus, parainfluenza virus, Boca virus, rhinovirus, a whole bunch of things. And the question I get asked all the time is there something wrong with my child? Why is my child getting infections every other week or every 2 weeks? Doctor, should we do some immune test? Are there any medications I can give to perhaps boost my child's immune system? And should I come off daycare? And we've already gone through 2 courses of antibiotics. Should we perhaps consider a change of a different type of antibiotic? So these are the common questions I get. First, let's start with why are we seeing such a large amount of infections? The short answer is we don't know for certain, but this is not unique to Malaysia. I think it's worldwide. And there's reports both in the Northern and Southern Hemisphere as well. And I think that the evidence probably is pointing towards that this being related indirectly to COVID-19. The mere lockdown, and it's unusual, the mere lockdown of COVID-19 over the last 2 years has resulted in everyone masking up and everyone staying at home and no one going to school. Therefore, we have not seen influenza or RSV or for that matter, any other viral infection amongst children in the last 2 years. when children don't get exposed to these kind of infections, over time, they lose their immunity. And then when school starts and masks comes off, there is a deluge of viral infections in the community, and that causes the spread. So in the past, children had some degree of immunity because they've been constantly being exposed to these kind of bugs. But when you don't have this kind of constant exposure over time, then you don't have that immune response that you can rapidly mitigate or at least reduce the severity. So I think that's the basic premise of why we're suddenly seeing so much of infections currently. But also they tend to be a little bit more severe. That's the impression we're getting.
What do you mean by more severe?
So what I'm trying to impress is the infections we're getting tend to maybe stay a bit longer. They tend to have more symptoms in terms of coughing, flus, vomiting, diarrhea, getting a little bit more time to get better. So that's what I'm trying to see. But generally, the children that get admitted are the ones where the infection has gone into the lungs, for example. So they're breathless, they require oxygen, require IV fluids because they're persistently vomiting and dehydrated. So those are the kids we tend to admit. By and large, I must still stress, majority of children, we can quite easily manage them in the outpatients.
But does this answer the question that you said parents have? Is there something wrong with my child?
In 99% of the cases, no. In 99% of the cases, these children have to go through these infections, and there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with the immune system. Their immune system is absolutely fine. The growth, the centiles. Children, we do see very rarely who actually have an underlying immune pathology. They have an immune deficiency. Those children, when they're sick, they end up in the ICU. They're very, very sick. 99.9% of children are not like that. And prior to COVID, children, and I'm talking about preschool children, can get viral infections 6 to 8 times a year, almost every month. That's normal. But because of this lockdown, in the last 3 months, we're seeing it every 2 weeks. So it's a little bit more unusual. And these infections tend to be seasonal. So influenza, RSV, we tend to see peaks in Malaysia, perhaps around July, maybe August, September. But April, May, June is very unusual. So it's pretty much a lull month. But for us to see such a large number of out-of-season infections is something that every other country worldwide is seeing. And that's why when you walk into a pharmacy today, it's almost impossible to get cough, flu, and fever medicines. Everyone's run out of it, including my hospital.
Add to that the supply issues that we've been hearing about medications as well. Two questions to follow on what you said. Because typically younger preschool age children would be continually exposed to these infections, they would have sort of built up their immunity from getting those infections. But because of the lockdown period, are you seeing then older children unusually being frequently sick as well?
Yes, we are. And I think even adults are having the same problem. Humans, evolutionary, we cohabitate with a variety of microorganisms, be it viral or bacterial organisms. These bacteria and viruses that are present in our environment serve two functions. One, they evolve with us. And with that, I mean, they're constantly within our environment and they constantly challenge our immune system. Depending on the type of bacteria or viruses that humans present with, it actually immunomodulates, which means it will allow our immune to function in a normal fashion. If we are presented with unusual bugs or not presented with any bugs for at least a year or two, then when we do get exposed to this kind of infections, we may have symptoms overwhelmingly leading to wheezing and coughing. So our immune function works in an abnormal fashion, number one. And number two, because we don't have that baseline immunity, even the children, older children who had immunity in the past tend to lose it over time because they're not being challenged. So I think that's why older children also are tend to see more infection, but less severe. So more frequent, yes, over bigger children and school-age children, but less severe.
Second question to follow up was, you keep talking about immunity, right? And, you know, I have heard among some parents this concern that repeated vaccinations, and I'm talking about the typical childhood vaccinations under the immunization program, this concern, so many jabs, is going to lower their immunity. Can you address that?
It's the reverse, actually. So the immune, the vaccines that we give primarily serve to improve or boost our immune system against specific infections. Prior to the vaccine era, our mortality rate in Malaysia was huge. So in the 60s, we are down to maybe 300, 400 children per 1,000 that died. Today, we are down to about 5 to 6 children per 1,000 children that are born. So it's a huge number of children saved and are healthy, primarily due to vaccines. Hygiene, of course, is important. So vaccines have clearly shown to be effective and safe. It does not in any way impede the immune system. It actually aids the immune system. But what the immune system is being challenged with is bacteria and viruses which are very weakened, that can't cause the illness, but tells the immune system to react upon it. So the next time the same bacteria and viruses are presented to the child, they've already got the innate or inherent immunity to fight the infection off so that they don't have symptoms. That's the basic premise of vaccines.
Let's go for a quick break and come back to talk a little bit. Let's get a bit of a 101 on some of these viruses that you are seeing so that parents kind of know what they're confronted with. And of course, some advice, right? When should parents be concerned? What they can do at home? When to see the doctor? I'm speaking to Dr. Sanjay Woodhull, consultant pediatrician, about this spike in, you know, influenza, coughs, colds, respiratory infections among children, and what parents need to look out for. Stay tuned to Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik. I'm speaking to consultant pediatrician, Dr. Sanjay Woodhull, who, along with, I think, many other pediatricians, GPs, doctors, have been swamped with cases of childhood infections, many of them the common respiratory infections. COVID-19 is something that a lot of clinics and hospitals are dealing with, influenza, something called RSV, a respiratory syncytial virus, and many other viruses that Dr. Sanjay, you reeled off just now. Can you give us a bit of a refresher? Perhaps you want to see what is most of concern that you would like to highlight, and just give us a bit of a 101 on what these viruses are.
So the common respiratory viruses, influenza, rhinovirus, and the RSV virus, that's the commonest that we see worldwide, in Malaysia included. Some of these viruses, depending on the host, which means the child, may end up with them wheezing. By large number of them, it just ends up with a normal flu, cough, sore throat for a couple of days and they're fine. Sometimes it's interrupted feeds, often it interrupts their sleep, and that's about it. But a smaller number will end up wheezing, and that infection that they get early on, which is typically RSV infections, can sometimes lead to asthma or recurrent wheezing in the future. So that's one risk when you get RSV. Outside of that, the other viruses like metapneumovirus, parainfluenza virus, adenoviruses, they are less common, and their symptoms can vary, majority of them, again, with a normal flu, cough, fever, to lung infections. So I tend to see the more ill spectrum, the ones that end up with pneumonias. By and large, majority of these children recover absolutely well. The important message I'd like to maybe relay to your listeners, Shari, is the fact that 90% of preschool children, when they do have fever, flus, and coughs, is due to a viral infection. What does that mean? It means 90% of the time, if your child has an infection, you do not need antibiotics. It doesn't mean the antibiotics, if your temperature is 40, you need antibiotics. Antibiotics don't treat fever. Antibiotics only treat viral infections. Giving one antibiotic after another antibiotic will only promote resistance towards bugs and will also affect the child's immune system. So we have recognized children with recurrent use of antibiotics tend to have more wheezing episodes. So stay away from antibiotics. The knee-jerk reaction is always antibiotics. So I'd like to just remind you all that that's not the cure-all, and it probably has more harm than benefit in preschool children.
Okay? But when is it acceptable or okay then for antibiotics to be prescribed? And how would you know?
Okay, so again, I always tell them, play the odds. If you don't use antibiotics with a fever under 5 years old, you're playing the odds. 90% of the time, you're right. That's a high percentage, you're right. Now, if the child's fever persists more than 3 to 4 days, then I would recommend at least an evaluation. During the evaluation is when they may consider, and that evaluation is a history plus an examination. And the doctors may suggest doing some nose swabs, may suggest doing some blood tests. And in doing the examination, if they decide that this could be a bacterial infection, that's when they will consider. But most of the time, this is viral. The other important evaluation is the vaccines. So as long as the child has had all the important vaccines, you're pretty much ruled out all most serious bacterial infections. And I'm talking about the pneumococcal vaccine. Now that Malaysia has got the pneumococcal vaccine in place within our national immunization schedule, I hardly ever see bacterial pneumonias. In the past, it's common. I hardly ever see that.
And for parents who are looking at these symptoms at home, and you said, you know, if the high fever persists for more than 3 or 4 days, that's sort of like a indication for another examination. Is that how long parents should observe before they bring their kids to the doctor?
Yes. So typically I'll tell them that don't worry about the fever touching 39, because many parents worry if my child's reaching 39, that child's going to fit, or the child's going to end up with brain damage. Absolutely not. It's very remote. It's very rare for children with high fever to fit. And if that were to occur, it's not going to cause harm, but come in for an assessment. The fever medication is given every 4 to 6 hours, only when the temperature goes past 38. And typically under 38, we don't recommend fever medicines. I want to also impress to your listeners that fever is part of the immune system to help fight the infection. And there's good evidence to show children whom have fevers for which we don't give medication, they actually recover faster because the fever doesn't allow it or kills the bugs faster. Number two, when you do decide to come in on the second or third day, this is, you will come in earlier if the child, you find the child's lethargic, even though the fever is mild or has settled and the child remains lethargic, come in. You will come in earlier if you find the sleep is very disturbed. You find if the child's persistently vomiting. If you think your child's having breathlessness, come in. Most of the time, when you give the fever medicine, the child's running around and very active, you are reassured. And then you can safely wait 2-3 days as long as the feeding and sleeping is not too disturbed.
Are there, and you mentioned the use of fever medication, and I guess the level of alarm among parents, totally understandable, however. Anything else that, parents are doing which you want to set the record straight on?
Perhaps, again, back to fever, I generally don't recommend sponging because that's just going to cause a lot of discomfort and shivering, but not really help with the fever. So I wouldn't recommend sponging when the child's high. So whenever children's fevers are high, only 3 things parents can do: fever medication, fluids, and rest. Only 3 things. And typically within 48, 72 hours, they tend to get better. In Malaysia, uniquely, what we have is dengue. So often by the third day or so, the fever is not getting better. We often would do a blood test also to ensure you're not missing dengue. We are not seeing much now, but that's always lurking in the background and something we always worry about. But by and large, most viral fevers, 2-3 days, they're back to normal.
I want to kind of mention the fact that children that come to see me for viral infections, it's not just the care of the fever that's important. It's also the symptoms that come along with the these kind of viral infections, which is a cough and flu. Now, I want to stress with your listeners that typically, children under 2 years of age, when they come in with a fever, flu, and a cough, we try not to use cough and flu remedies. And the reason that's so is because these coughs and flu medication that we have don't just not work for these children, but are not particularly safe. So when they come in for a fever, flu, cough, and your doctor evaluates, there's one only important question to ask, and that is your child's lungs affected or not? If the doctor tells you the lungs are clear, it then indicates that the cough and flu is arising from the nose and throat and not from the lungs. In that case, in small children, there's only two things you can do. So typically children one and above, you can use plenty of saline sprays and perhaps some honey in any supermarket. A teaspoon once, twice, or three times a day would be adequate. In children one under a year, you're only left with using saline sprays and nothing else. And you can use the saline sprays as often as you like into the nostril, like 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. And it's really going to be symptomatic treatment because anything more will cause harm rather than good. I stress this because many children that see me have already seen a number of physicians outside, and they come with all kinds of cough flu remedies, green, brown, blue, yellow, and asking me for any other color. So it's not the color of the medication. Medications just don't work. And our job is just to reassure parents that, listen, the child is otherwise well, the child's lungs are clear, the infection is primarily centered over the nose and throat, and it should get better in a couple of days. Now, we do notice if your child has, for example, influenza or COVID-19, very, very, very unlikely the lungs are going to get affected in the first few days. Typically, if that would occur, it'll occur maybe in the fifth, sixth, or seventh day versus RSV. RSV, very often the lungs occur very early in the onset of the illness. So typically, second, third day, they may end up with a wheeze or phlegm in the lungs. So that may sometimes help the doctor differentiate, could this be RSV or could this be influenza or COVID when a child comes in with a fever, flu, cough in the initial 2 or 3 days?
So you're talking about cough and runny nose medicines that basically try to suppress the symptoms, right?
Correct, that's right. So a lot of these cough remedies that we've seen in children, small children, tend to cause more respiratory depression, tend to cause more apnea, so cessation in breathing. And there are reports of deaths because of cough flu remedies in small children. So that's why we stay away from it.
Would antihistamines fall under that?
Yes. So antihistamines typically don't work in under twos. So we don't typically want to use it. They may be of some benefit above 2.5, 3. But it's dubious. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
So under the age of 2, just want to quickly point out, I think under the age of 1, no honey should be given as well, right?
Absolutely. So you can retry honey above the age of 1. And under 1, you're only left with saline sprays. In a very small babies, 2 or 3 months of age, with a little bit of a stuffy nose, you may try a bit of nasal suction gently, but really nothing more than that.
Mm. What about children above the age of 2?
So above 2, 2.5, then you can try syrups, but be very careful. So very often we try maybe syrups just at night so that the sleep won't be too disturbed. And again, it's explain to parents that, listen, you try the syrup that we have. It's not particularly sedative. And if you find despite using syrups, it doesn't really work, then just don't bother using it. It's not that the medication is incorrect. It's that it doesn't seem to work as well. I think school-age children, certainly it does work better. But our challenge is certainly not for the under twos. And the 2 to 5s, sometimes it helps, sometimes it doesn't help. But giving more tend to cause more harm than benefit.
Mm. And I think as a parent, you can see where that's coming from, right? They just want to give relief for the very, very distressing symptoms. Anything else that you'd like to highlight?
No, I think that's the gist of what I want to say, and to be careful about using over-the-counter remedies. Because unfortunately, sometimes when I walk into pharmacies, I do notice parents beside me are inquiring with the pharmacist about cough flu remedies. And, sometimes they're just given over the counter. But just be wary and be careful, particularly the under twos.
So you've described earlier that it's really just a culmination of factors due to the past lockdowns and us coming out of it that's leading to this surge, this unusual surge, right? Because, I was reading some articles where similar unusual trends are being seen in the US, for example, and people are throwing around things like, oh, it's a super cold. Anything of that sort that you're concerned about?
Okay, so super colds, I think what they try to talk about is the fact that when I do get an infection, it tends to be a little bit more severe, it tends to last a bit longer, and I tend to have more symptoms compared to previous years. To a large extent, Shari, I think that's anecdotal. That's not been clearly proven, but I think that's the experience I'm getting from some of my patients as well. It's not a universal thing. But yes, I think it is because both adults and children have not been exposed to infections for the last 2-3 years. Every time you get exposed to an infection, you actually challenge and build your immune system. If you do not get that kind of exposure, then over time, that immunity that you naturally have will tend to wane. And then when you are exposed to a host of infections, it very rapidly spreads in the community. And so you get one infection on top of the other. Just when you're recovering from infection, you pick up something else. And that's why they tend to find, my God, this is never leaving me. It often is recurring infections. We hope we're going to get out of this soon.
Mm. Yeah, you know, siblings then affecting one another and it never ends, right?
That's right.
You know, I was going to ask you then, okay, then how do parents protect their children from these infections that you're seeing? But is the idea then, you know, not to protect them completely, 100%, never get them?
difficult question. Okay, I'll try my best to answer this. Because of the current COVID situation, I would still think masking, hand washing, basic hygiene, that needs to continue. We can't run away from that. Number 2, children need to go to school. The education is critically important. Their psychology is affected in many of these children. So education and going to school remains important. Having said that, your child will get an infection. Your child will get COVID-19. You cannot run away from that. Your child may get COVID-19 today, tomorrow, next week, next year, 10, 20 years from now. But that's going to happen. All right? But over time, as the immune system constantly gets challenged, you build your own immunity and you're going to get stronger. 2, please do not forget to make sure all your vaccines are taken, including the influenza vaccine, every year. That reduces the risk significantly of having viral flus and colds at least 3 to 4 times a year. Influenza is still a problem. Influenza keeps changing. And there's also a concern we're getting one infection on top of another. I've got a number of patients, COVID-19 plus influenza coming in. So if possible, please get your influenza vaccine. The third thing I often get is immune boosters. What about probiotics? Are those something that we can use to help my child? Absolutely not. Outside of the vaccines, there is and hygiene. There's very little else we can do. But I'm just going to add one more new exciting thing perhaps that's coming onto the market. And that is using a new polyclonal vaccine. It's an oral spray that's been developed in Europe that has shown to boost and immunomodulate young children against defenses from viral infections. So they use bacteria that are killed into a bottle and is sprayed under a tongue. And that's given once a day, every day for a couple of months. And what that does is that it will allow the child to develop a normal human host response towards viral infections. That's not in Malaysia yet, but I'm really looking out for this. And hopefully by the end of the year, early next year, that'll come out. And that may be an early game changer in respect to protecting small children against viral infections.
Does that mean that we won't need the you know, 2-month, 3-month, 5-month jabs anymore?
Oh, no. Those are mandatory. Those are critical. Those are very targeted vaccines. They target specific bacteria, specific viruses. What I'm talking about is, for example, the whole idea of exploring this polyclonal bacterial oral vaccines is simply because we recognize children who live in barns, children who live or grew up in the farms, children who grew up in the kampongs hardly have any asthma and wheezing versus the city center. We have a host of allergies. And one of the reasons we suspect is because of this hygiene hypothesis, wherein children who are growing, who are exposed to the right environment, the right bacteria, tend to develop normal human responses towards infections. And therefore, they don't have infections or mild infections and therefore less allergies. Children in the city center, where parents are always wiping with alcohol, wipes 24/7, they don't get exposed to any bugs and therefore the immune system never gets challenged. And then they function in an abnormal way. more asthma, more allergies, more wheezing. So I think that's where the position of this new medication perhaps can be, to reduce the risk of recurrent infections and to reduce the risk of wheezing recurrently in the future. But still early days.
It does sound like a game changer. At the same time, I'm also thinking, just chuck them in the dirt and play then. But we live in different times now, don't we?
That's right, we do.
For a while, hand, foot and mouth disease was on the increase. Is that still a concern right now? And what's some advice you want to give parents there?
Okay, I'm not seeing as much hand, foot, mouth disease. I'm seeing it. I used to see it, I think, about 2 months ago, pretty much every day. I'm probably seeing it now once a week or once in 2 weeks. So it's not a major problem. And the main concern with hand, foot, mouth disease really is the oral fluid intake. So because of the ulcers, particularly in small children, they refuse to drink. So the symptoms will be spots in the hands and feet and an excessive drooling of saliva. And then they're refusing to eat and drink and often with some fever. So a quick look in the mouth will suggest the ulcers in the mouth. And often we use drops to help relieve the symptoms. But we are coming back to square one, which is we don't have medication in hospital. We don't have medication in the pharmacy. So we're down to just reassuring parents that don't worry, this is going to settle in 2 or 3 days' time. Very, very rarely do these children require admission for IV fluids. Most of the time, we can manage them as outpatients.
I also want to get a word on COVID vaccination for kids who are eligible, 5 and above. Is it still important right now?
I would think so. What parents, I think what the world is aware of, COVID-19 doesn't seem to affect children as much as adults in respect to respiratory infections. And I think that's true. What I see, and I've got sitting in my ICU now, children with MIS-C, what the vaccine has clearly shown is that you can reduce, and pretty much most children don't have MIS-C post-COVID-19. And MIS-C is a condition where following a COVID infection, and the COVID infection can be very mild. Very often it can be just a sniffle or two or mild fever for a day, and that's it. And 2 to 6 weeks later, they end up in high fever, in conjunctivitis, in rashes, and nearly in shock. And these children that come in probably most of the time end up in my ICU. And we need to use a whole bunch of medicine to reverse it and to get them better. So that's very frightening for us when we see it. I must state, this is very rare. How rare? Every 3,000 to 4,000 children that get COVID, one will get this. So it is very rare, but it's a real concern. How do you reduce it? How do you mitigate this? Get the vaccine.
Even for 1 in 3,000, for that one parent, that's 100%, isn't it?
Correct. Because it's preventable.
Mm. A final message on what we've been discussing today, Dr. Sanjay.
Well, I think most importantly, we can't run away from the fact that children are going to get fevers, flus, coughs. Often they may have some mild vomiting and diarrhea. To be just ensuring they get adequate fluids, making sure you can just use fever medication whenever their fever is above 38 and adequately hydrated. By the second or third day, or certainly by the third or fourth day, if they're not getting better, persistent or getting worse, come in for an assessment. During the assessment, bring your vaccine books along, ensure your doctors have reviewed it to ensure that all vaccines are updated. If they're not, then look at getting it as well. Please do not hesitate to get the COVID vaccine. I think that's safe and that's effective. And the FDA just very recently approved the COVID vaccine for children 6 months to 5 years. Malaysia hasn't adopted it yet, but I think that's going to come in soon. And when that comes in, I know many parents are asking me when that's going to come in. But when that comes in, I think that will also help a lot.
And don't take antibiotics right off the bat.
Absolutely, not straight away. Absolutely, that's right.
And, you know, Dr. Sanjay, we did an entire show with you previously talking about fevers as well, some of the beliefs, practices, what you wanted to set straight. So you can look that up by searching on our podcasts for fever in children. I've been speaking to consultant pediatrician Dr. Sanjay Woodhull. This has been Health and Living BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.